Good evening and welcome to the Local Football Near Post Radio Show. I'm Aaron Walker and alongside me this evening we've got Eamon Flanagan and Russ Gibbs. This week we've joined by two very special guests in the studio today, and it's Christine Ning and with him a man with a very interesting football story, Tim Skinner. We've also got a massive half hour coming up. We take a look at what's making news in Canberra tonight. We have a chat with Christine and Tim about their football stories and catch up on A-League developments. If you've got any football stories which you think you can send to us from Canberra, please email us on media@capitalfootball.com.au.
From the Central Coast Mariners, you're listening to the Near Post on 2XX 98.3 FM.
Now we'll have some news articles from Russell Gibbs. So take it away, Russ.
Thanks very much, Aaron. We'll start with the news of the Canberra invasion of the Sydney FC Youth versus ACT Rockets youth match at Macquarie University last Friday evening, when the hosts defeated the lads from the capital 3-2 in an entertaining encounter. Sam Munro grabbed a brace of goals for Sydney FC, including the match winner from 35-metre thunderbolt, whilst Kofi Danning had opened the scoring. Both are Canberra expats. For the Rockets, under the tutelage of Pat McCann, Zvonimir Rogic scored both goals, whilst Luke Pilkington, Taylor Beaton and Stephen Lustica were outstanding. Further matches against A-League youth opponents in the Newcastle Jets and the Central Coast Mariners are mooted shortly.
Canberra United, with less than a month to kick off, it's expected that the FFA will release the draw and announce the official broadcaster of the Westfield W League early next week. Stay tuned for that exciting news.
That's good news indeed. And this weekend, local side Tuggeranong United will face South Soccer Club Gordonvale in their end-of-season tour to Cairns. The match will be played at Tyka Park with a 4pm kick-off, with the Tuggeranong squad consisting of players drawn from throughout the grades, from Premier League down to State League Division 9. It's an eclectic mix and it's anyone's guess as to how it will sound and how the match will go. As a heat and humidity mode play a part, sounds like the Socceroos Asian Cup campaign, and I believe my dad might even be bringing the boots out for a bit of a run.
I hope he's better than you, Russ.
There's lots of people that are.
The ACT's academy side is taking place in the FFA Boys National Championships at the moment, and with a year of experience under the belt, the under-15s have made a fantastic start to their national campaign, with victories in their first two matches over Queensland Country 2-1 and Victoria Metro 2-1, but suffered their first defeat yesterday against defending champion South Australia. The 15 sits second in their pool at the halfway stage, with the top two to progress through to the semis. Games against Victoria Country and Queensland Metro to come tomorrow and Friday, respectively.
And staying with the FFA Boys National Championships, the under-14s, in contrast, have made a slow start to their national campaign, with a pair of losses and a draw from their three fixtures so far. The under-14s opened the tournament with a 5-1 loss to New South Wales Metro, but backed that up with a gallant 1-0 draw against Queensland Metro the next day. Unfortunately, a 2-0 loss to Football West yesterday sees the 14s level with Northern Territory for last in Pool A. They finish off their matches this week against Victoria Country and Northern Territory.
In Young Matildas and Promising Matildas news, Canberra's Christine Walters is resting her tired legs after a big week of football at the AIS. She was involved in the Promising Matildas camp late last week and backed up to be involved in the Young Matildas camp over the weekend, who claimed consecutive victories over China's under-20 teams. The future of the Matildas is looking bright, considering the Chinese team was, on average, 2 years older. Local player Bronwyn Studwin also involved in the Young Matildas camp, both getting ready to make their international football debuts.
Moving indoors, the Capital Football's Premier League's kicked off on Friday nights. We'll just quickly run through the results for you. In the Men's Premier League, Timberwolves FC 1, Belconnen United 1, Queanbeyan FC 3, White Eagles 2, and the TUFC Gunners 2, Canberra City Prawns 4. In the Women's Premier League, Canberra City 1, Bell West Aldiva 1, Boomerang FS Majestics 10, the Woden Valley Soccer Stars 2, the Woden Valley Dynamos 11, Belconnen United Vipers 2, and the Cobras Under-16s 2, Belconnen United PYNK 0. And in one final piece of news, regular Near Post host Chris Gottes has something to smile about last week as his mixed netball team triumphed in their grand final. That's probably why he's not here. They're on their MAB Monday, I understand, after winning the grand final, and they've been going on all week. So congratulations to Chris and his team.
I'm Amy Chapman from the Matildas, and you're listening to the Near Post on 2XX 98.3 FM.
And next up, we've got an interview with Eamon Flanagan and Christine Ning.
Christine, welcome to the Near Post. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Now, how would you describe yourself, Christine? A bit of a football fanatic, would that be right?
I really love football.
You really love football. So where did your passion for the game come from?
I think it started just my brothers and I grew up around a football-loving family. I mean, Dad Well, you know there's something wrong when you grow up thinking Alex Ferguson is a family friend the way your dad and Uncle raves on about him. So,
and that's not necessarily a good thing to have the Manchester, Manchester United manager as a family friend. I'm sure you would agree. Although I do notice, I think you can find Christina on the World Game Forum sometimes. There's a little bit of a Manchester United flavour about some of your posts.
I know, I can't help it.
You can't help it. So you've been in Canberra a while now, have you? And have you played football in Canberra?
I haven't actually found a proper team. You know, I've been playing a bit of mixed comps and indoor and starting futsal just to test the waters. And then maybe when the season starts again, I might be able to try out. See how the fitness goes.
Well, I know that you were down at the Young Matildas game on the weekend. What were your thoughts on that against the China under-20s?
I was really impressed. I mean, the Chinese girls really tested, the Young Matildas, and they answered back with a lot of guts and perseverance and came away with the win. It was really exciting.
So guts and perseverance, they're Aussie characters that we love to have, but we don't always like to see them. You know, we'd like to be a bit more technically flavoured, I suppose, in our Aussie football. But we were okay, were we?
The Chinese were really structured in their attack in the midfield. But we did break them down, once they got to the back line. I think they're a bit more technical, but we had a bit more brawn about us and, could just kind of buffer the attacks.
And I guess a win's a win in any level of football. And we are a bit younger than them and still developing.
Yeah.
Now, Canberra United are about to start on their Canberra Women's League journey and football women's journey. We've been talking on it here. It's great to get a female fan, I guess, talking. What do you feel about this?
I'm really excited. I mean, honestly, just the prospect of it actually starting was like a dream you didn't want to wake up from. And then, last week meeting Grace Gill, it kind of set in that this is really, it's just real. And watching the Young Matildas last weekend it's even more kind of exciting.
So so what are your plans for the season? You're going to be heading out to the games, are you?
Every one of them.
Every one.
Hopefully, if I'm not stuck in here.
Stuck in here is not an expression we use. Christine is going to be one of our new hosts on the Sunday show. We look forward to having you, Christine. As a female football expert, but also as a you've got opinions on all sorts of football. Sydney FC fan, Manchester United fan.
Yeah.
It makes no difference. You can talk about the whole game, can't you?
Yep.
Okay, so and for the Canberra United, they've made a few signings. Who you're particularly looking forward to seeing play at this moment?
Well, personally, it would be Grace Gill.
Because you met her?
Yep. Finally, I've been, shouldn't actually say that. I've been stalking most of those girls, but no.
It's okay. We don't mind a bit of stalking. And if you hang around this studio enough, you'll probably get to meet a few more. So yep. Well, we look forward to more football talk with you, Christine.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Eamon.
Hi, my name is May. I am 7. My favourite soccer player is Lucas Neal.
If you're going to the near post,
arrivée première.
And next up, guys, we've got a very interesting chap who is originally a Canberra boy. He spent the last 9 years over in England, where he studied sport at university and eventually did a dissertation in football in Africa. And his name's Tim Skinner. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you.
So, Tim, tell us, what was your dissertation on?
My dissertation was on the migration of Ghanaian youngsters to Europe and the processes and controversies regarding that, basically. So, lots.
Okay. And before we get too deep into that, you're originally from Canberra. What was your football background from around here?
I played as a kid for Majura up until under-17s. And then when we couldn't get enough players for an under-17 teams at Majura, I went to Canberra City under-19s and played for them for a year, and then went to Burns Club, where I played first grade there. So that was pretty good.
First grade, wow. So going back to your dissertation, what do you feel were some of the big issues to come out of that?
Some of the big issues, because I was interested in it originally because I'd already been to Ghana and I was interested in the football and their passion for football over in Ghana. And I just had heard a bit about the agents and the players making their way to Europe. And I just thought some of it sounded a bit dodgy. So I really wanted to get down sort of to the bottom of that and find out a few interesting things there.
Yeah, I've heard some of those agents are some pretty shady characters, so I'm sure there's a lot of really sad stories that go along over there. A lot of kids that get, or parents that have money taken off them to go to these soccer schools, which may or may not be what they're all cracked up to be. What did you find out?
With the agents, there is, and well, middlemen, as they call themselves, they're most of them are really dodgy and obviously all unlicensed, and they sort of elicit money from parents, say that we'll take, I'd take $600 and I'll guarantee that I'll get your son a contract with a big European club. So maybe they'll say an English club or a Spanish club or even a Belgian club. And so they will maybe have to sell their house or work extra shifts or whatever to get that money. And then quite often it doesn't turn out the way they plan, which is a shame.
So how did you carry out your research, Tim? Who did you talk to get the information that you needed?
Well, it's a funny story. I actually just rocked up in Accra, which is Ghana's capital, and just went into the Football Association and said, can I speak to the president? And he's not here, but you can speak to sort of the chief executive. So that was pretty good. And I spoke to him, asked him a few questions. Over here, I spoke to Les Murray because he was on the FIFA Ethics Committee at the time. So I wanted to see sort of his point of view about that and about his opinions on some of the comments that Sepp Blatter had made regarding some of these transactions. The Director of Sports Development in Ghana. So, yeah, quite a lot of...
So you just turned up to Ghana, went into their capital, found the Football Association and just said, I want to speak to some people.
Yep, basically it. And because I'd been to Ghana before, I knew sort of my way around and I knew the way to deal with people and how, you know, they're so friendly, the Ghanaians, that they always want to help you. So I didn't find it a problem at all. It's much easier doing research in Africa than in Europe.
So what sort of conclusions and results did you find after your years of working on this?
Okay, well, the end result was that the whole idea was that a lot of Europeans, including Sepp Blatter, have made a big deal about all these problems. And I was sort of coming with a kind of controversial view that actually it's almost no different from anywhere else in the world. Harry Kewell went to Leeds when he was 15, and a lot of it, well, I called it post-colonial guilt. I called it, say, the Europeans are guilty for what they did in the colonial times. And so they want to try and protect the ex-colonies now. And that's sort of the conclusion I came up with. While there is a problem, it's not all that bad, and there's lots of success stories that do come out of it.
Tim, one thing I've seen come up in the media time and time again is when there's FIFA junior tournaments come about, a lot of the players' age discrepancies, they're lying about their age. Or when Obafemi Martin signed for Newcastle, I heard he was anywhere between 18 and 40. So what's the go?
Yeah, no, again, it's another thing that I looked into. I went to a couple of football academies when I was in Ghana, and I did some other research as well, and it's a huge, huge problem. And I know FIFA have done research at under 17 sort of World Cup level, where they did MRI scans on their wrist, which is apparently the best way to test your age within a year. And because FIFA funded the research, well, this is my opinion, because FIFA funded the research, and the research basically said all the ages may not be correct. So I came to the conclusion that a lot of the ages weren't correct, but because FIFA funded it, they didn't want to come out and say it's completely wrong. So that's my opinion on that anyway.
It's an interesting dissertation. Is there anywhere we can read copies from? Or
Yeah, you can, if you email the media at Capital Football, they can have my email address and I can forward it on.
So if there's anybody out there listening that'd like to read a copy of Tim's dissertation, just email media at capitalfootball.com.au and ask for his email address. Moving on a little bit away from that, you've recently returned from Kenya, where I understand you undertook some interesting charity work. What was that all about?
Yeah, I came back from Kenya last month. I went with a UK charity called Tackle Africa, who basically were they were tired of some of the other charities going into Africa and saying, you know, let's have a game of football, and at the end we'll all sit down and we'll tell you about AIDS. And they didn't like how that was going about. So they thought, let's come up with a bit of a more interesting way of going about that and trying to help out. So a really great coach called Charlie Gamble, he came up with this manual where he had loads of football drills that all had HIV representation. So, for example, one of them was called Penalty Shootout. And You get loads of people into the goal, say seven or eight goalkeepers, and the rest of the people just try and shoot and score. And it's obviously very difficult to score. But then when you start taking away goalkeepers, it becomes more easy to score. So if you want to represent that with HIV, in your human body, if you've got white blood cells, then your body can sort of repel infections. But the HIV virus attaches itself to them. Sorry, a bit complicated. Attaches itself to them and kills the white blood cells, so then you're more prone to infection. And so then you can explain that if you've got HIV, that you're more prone to infection, that you may well get sick from that. And also you're practicing, you know, your skills, so you're shooting and everything like that. So there's lots of those drills which we did in Kisumu, which is in Western Kenya. It's about 30% HIV prevalation there, so it was really, really interesting.
So what motivates a Canberra boy like yourself to head over to Ghana and Kenya and get involved in these sort of things?
I don't know, really. When I left Canberra, I mean, I love football, and I've always loved football. And obviously, living in England, you just can't help get involved with football. And a couple of years ago, I wanted to go to Ghana, and I coached a side out there, a third division side out there, and just love the passion for football in Africa is just unbelievable. Everyone loves it. Everyone's playing it. They don't need equipment. They don't need anything. They just play it on the streets, barefoot. And I don't know, I just I'm so interested in football in Africa, and it just wanted to do it.
You said you coached a team out there. What was the sort of skill levels like? What age group were you talking about?
It was a third division side, and the divisions are sort of set up differently. So the third division was that region. And so it's anything from sort of 16-year-olds to about 25-year-olds, but it is all ages. And fitness was ridiculous. They were just... Everyone was like Michael Essien. They were all just so fit and strong. Skill level, it varied. It really did vary a lot. A couple of players I coached, I found out now they're playing into the first division in Ghana now. But just the passion for it, it was unbelievable. Literally every time we scored, there was a pitch invasion from the whole village, and it was awesome. And especially when I scored as well, I brought myself on. And
I was going to say, did you pull on the boots for a couple of matches?
I had to, yeah. Of course. So I did bring on, brought myself on, and I did score in one game. And
did that ever happen in Canberra when you scored a goal? The crowd running on with passion.
If he ever gets one, he'll let you know about it.
Yeah. The scoring in Canberra didn't really work, but no, it didn't.
And was it a thunderbolt?
Yeah, I'd say so. There's no footage to prove it. So,
we're talking to Tim Skinner, a local man with a lot of interesting stories. Following on from the Kenya one, we'll have a chat in just a moment about your time in England when you were with had a spell helping out at Watford, I understand. We'll talk about that in just a moment.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.
Okay, guys, so we were just discussing your time at Watford. Tim, what happened over there?
Okay, yeah, so in first year of uni, myself and my mate Joe, we needed to do some coursework for uni. We had to observe some coaches in practice, and we were sort of given no guidelines as to what we had to do. So we thought, well, why not contact a few of the Premier League clubs? And there's lots of Premier League clubs in London, and unfortunately... only a few got back to us. Watford, obviously not a Premier League club at that point, but they got back to us. So we went up to Watford's academy for their under 12s to 16s, looked at their coaches using Arizona State University Observational Index, so basically 15 points. And everything that happens during the training session has a tally mark. And we marked that down and we were observing those coaches. So,
did you find anything of interest that could be incorporated into the Canberra League bid perhaps?
It was just really interesting to observe the coaches. So maybe, I mean, it may be done with the local coaches here to see their coaching behaviours. I don't know how it could be incorporated into the bid, but But certainly it's around. So
how does a 15-point plan work? Are they marked on different aspects of their coaching ability?
Not so much ability, but it does actually reflect how good a coach they are, I think, anyway. And it's all the points, say, you have positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement. Even silence is a tally mark. So you say at the start, so every 5 seconds, what are they doing? And you tally that down. So... yeah, literally everything is on there, and then you've got other as well. So you see the behaviours over the course of a session of each coach. They really, really do come out.
What differences did you find between the Watford setup, say, and the African setup? They must have been huge.
Oh, massive. Absolutely massive. And Watford's academy is really good, actually, and they're one of the better ones in England. And the guys were really helpful, and we had the full support of them, and even AD Boothroyd made himself available to us, and he's the manager at Watford. So the setup at Watford was fantastic. They had indoor 3G, which is the new AstroTurf pitches, and it was huge.
So you've obviously made some fantastic contributions to football overseas in various countries. Now that you're back in Australia, do you have any plans to get involved here?
I'd like to. Yep, that's the plan. I've been back only a couple of days, so I'm currently looking for a job. If anyone out there has one, sorry about that.
Plugging yourself on the radio. That's fine. Yeah.
So yeah, I hope to get involved in sport in Australia, whether or not it's in Canberra. I'd like to think I could come back here, and it's my home, so I feel very comfortable here.
Strapping on the boots again.
I hope so. Ah. Whether or not it's in first grade, I don't know.
You mentioned going back to the Watford just briefly. You're at university. Where were you at university, and what were you studying?
I was at Brunel University, which is a good sports university. It's in West London. I was studying business studies and sports science, which sort of allowed me to sort of focus mainly on sociology of sport. Rather than going into biomechanics and stuff, which is more what I'm interested in, as you could probably imagine by now. So into ethics and discrimination in sport as well. So.
And you were there for how many years?
3 years. But so I was in England for almost nine years. Yeah.
So apart from studying for 3 years, you must have had some time off. Did you get to see any football matches while you were over in the UK?
Yeah, I saw quite a lot. I lived in York for a while as well, so my team is York City. Give them a little plug
as well.
We've
got two York City fans in the same studio. What is the chance? The York City attendance this week must be nothing.
That's why Aaron brought him in.
I think it was, yeah. They wanted to have a chat about York City. So they're your team, are they?
They are, yeah. So I actually introduced Aaron to York City. So York it was a great place to go.
I'm feeling like a York City fan already. I think it's it's growing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll take them on, that's fine. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there is a York City Australia Supporters Club, so we'll have to
it's
find
just
out.
In this room.
Yeah. They're only a small club, but they've got a lot of great character at York City.
Yeah, they do.
I really enjoyed following the club.
Yeah. So is there any favourite teams, any favourite players rather, from your day supporting York? That we might have heard of.
That you might have heard of. Well, yeah. Michael Proctor was on loan from Sunderland at York City, and you may have heard of him. He scored a couple of own goals for Sunderland 1 year against Liverpool. And Lee Cook as well was probably my favourite player at York. He went to Fulham last year. He's on loan somewhere now, but he came from QPR. But he was the most exciting player, I think.
And what do you think your biggest game was that you saw while you were in the UK?
I went to a few. I went to the last game at Wembley, the old Wembley, England versus Germany.
Yeah, won't mention that one. Let's skip on to the next one.
I went to an FA Cup semi-final, Arsenal Spurs at Old Trafford. That was pretty big.
Yeah, and how did that go?
Sorry, Tim, we'll just butt in. You actually worked as a guide for the new Wembley.
Yes, I did.
How did you get that job?
Bit of an affiliation with Wembley. Just went in and talked about football just like I'm doing now. And it's a great job. Great job at the new Wembley.
What's the stadium like? I've never been.
It's immense. Literally, it's so good. It's so big, and it's just amazing stadium.
So you've obviously packed in a lot in your 26 years at the moment, been around the world watching football, playing football. Where would you like to be in 5 years? Obviously, if you could name your ideal job, what would it involve?
Something to do with sports development. I want to be back in Australia, but I still like to. Obviously, I like to travel. Once you've got the bug, you want to keep moving around. So, but I'd like to be back in Australia. I'm looking forward to being back. But yeah, something to do with sports development around the world.
Thanks very much, Tim. that's a really good interview, one of our more interesting ones that we've had. We've had lots of interesting people in. Nobody, obviously, that's been to Ghana and Africa. But, yeah, and very
thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And, Russ, I understand that you've been off watching the National Youth League with the Sydney team play against the Rockets. How did that go?
Yeah, well, they went up there on the weekend. It finished 3-2 to Sydney FC. Something prohibited me from getting out there at the very end, but I did speak to the coach, Pat McCann, after the game, and he was very, very impressed by the way his boys had played. He told me that the Sydney FC team that they played against were a high-quality side. They had a few trialists in there. They had Michael Enfield, who is a USA international, playing for them as well. Steve O'Connor obviously drills them along the lines of the AIS boys. They play a lot of slick football. They pass it around quite well. And as we mentioned in the news, it was the Canberra boys that did the damage, which was an irony not lost on anybody that was present or heard about the game. Kofi Danning opened the scoring. Sam Munro scored two. Right at the death, the Rockets youth had a really good chance to level the game. Luke Pilkington was free inside the penalty area, but the ball bobbled horribly on him.
So would you say the Rockets matched it with Sydney? Was there a golfing class difference? Or was
for the first 25 minutes or so, the Sydney FC side were much the better team. It was the case of the tempo and the physicality and the intensity of the whole thing. But once they had actually settled down and started to play some football, they were up there. And I think to lose 3-2 against a side, as I mentioned, that had an international in it and a lot of trialists on basis bodes really well for the future. They've got a couple of games coming up against Newcastle and Central Coast, and if they can hold their own, there's no reason why they shouldn't be there permanently.
Was there any players that took your eye other than the Canberra boys?
Well, by all accounts, Luke Pilkington, again, was excellent. We've had him in here in the studio before. He's a high-quality midfielder. He had a play with the Central Coast Mariners, of course, when they were down here pre-season. Stephen Lustiger, another player that stood out. Taylor Beaton, again, he was a player that obviously we've mentioned. We've mentioned a few times this year. He's played for Belconnen. He's starred for the... he played for the Mariners as well, and he also had a run with the Newcastle Jets in pre-season. And Zvonimir Rogic, who scored a brace of goals, obviously. That was good for him. And Stephen Lustiger, I think I mentioned him. So yeah.
Now, I'm not entirely sure, so correct me if I'm wrong, but there is only seven teams in the Youth League because Wellington don't have one. So would there be any chance of the Rockets slipping in there as the eighth?
It's something they've discussed before. Logistically, it's finding the finances to fund it and getting the team regularly playing. At the moment, the bye team each weekend, Capital Football, I understand, through Pat McCann and Mila Milanovic, are looking at playing the bye team whenever they get the opportunity. So this weekend they were hoping to go to play the Newcastle Jets because they've got the bye, I believe, this week. And then it's the Central Coast Mariners. So there's opportunities there. I think at the start of the year when they did mention it, obviously, like I said, the finances weren't in place. I understand Wollongong was looking at a similar thing to try and get off the ground to put their youth team in there to play against these teams in the bye week as well. They haven't got as far down the road as we have. We've obviously got lucky that Steve O'Connor was quite happy to let his side have a run out. They're all looking for games, these teams. I don't see why not.
Mm. And surely the Canberra United women's team bodes well in that decision as well?
Absolutely. I mean, there's lots of news coming out of the Canberra bids in terms of the women's and the men's league. And Ivan Slavic has mentioned this week that the funds are in place for the men's A-League team. Obviously, as part of being in the A-League, you've got to have a National Youth League team now. And with the Rockets standing up already and being counted, I think it's a good start for them.
Okay, well, thanks, Russ. And I'd like to issue a big thank you to Christine and Tim, who we had in the studio today. So you're both very interesting guests. And thank you very much.
Have we got a few seconds left? Have you got any more news, Russ?
Oh, yeah, I can just tell you a little bit more if you've got a couple of minutes. Yeah, we're running a little bit ahead of ourselves. I can talk a little bit about the A-League expansion bid, if you like, because I know now that the Canberra bid has now 755 paid-up financial members, which is incredible when you consider that the Central Coast Mariners bid had 500 members when they started the first season and not one of them was financially paid up. So to start that, and now Ivan Slavic is saying that the money... He's already got about $5 million in the bank, according to a report that Merrin Sherwood put in the Canberra Times yesterday. It's great news. The chances of it going ahead, obviously, is getting better and better by the day. I think if we can keep supporting the bid, getting people there to games, getting people signed up, then it's only going to be good for Capital Football and for Canberra region.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week, so I'll have to bid everyone a farewell, and thank you very much to the guests and everyone involved.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.